you're serious about private label and getting into private label and advancing with private label very, very quickly, here's a great opportunity. And there's only 9 slots left. So it's not like, hey, think about it. This is a pull the trigger if you're in and get in fast. It's Amazing Freedom Private Label Retreat in Breckenridge, Colorado, May 19th. Through the 22nd of 2017. You're responsible for your airfare to get to Denver and your way home. That's what you have to worry about. The rest is taken care of. All transportation, all meals, all housing. Oh, the house? It's a 15,000 square foot home. Yep, 15,000 square foot home. First class meals catered by an executive chef on site. He will make it right there for you. We've got private label 101 to 10001. I mean, it's everything you need. Finding products, bringing products to market. It's one-on-one personal training. It's a handful of people. There's only 9 slots left. Andy Slammons, Nate Slammons, Liron Hirschkorn will be there to help you be successful. This is not cheap, but it is advanced and it's compressed into a couple days. Here's the other great thing. Andy's going to partner with you on a couple products while you're there. So you have an opportunity to get into the private label game with Andy. If you're interested, there's no time to wait because there's only 9 slots left. AmazingFreedom.com/retreat. AmazingFreedom.com/retreat.
Welcome to the e-commerce momentum podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the e-commerce momentum podcast. This is episode 185, EJ Kaga. Now, this dude is cool. So laid back, yet so smart, so personable, can fit in any circumstance. I just saw how comfortable he was. I got to hang out with him, and we talk about that. And we also talk about his time in the restaurant industry. And we're not talking minor restaurants, although I'm sure he worked at some of those. He's worked for some of the bigger chefs. Now, we don't name them by name, but names that you see on the Food Network, the chefs. He's worked for many of them, including running some of the backrooms restaurants, big companies. $12 million was the biggest one. And I think a lot of the skills that he learned there transfer so well into this business. And I hope you look back at the things that you've learned in the businesses you've been in and worked in, because they also transfer. You just have to figure out what they can transfer to help you do. Let's get into the podcast. Welcome back to the e-commerce momentum podcast. And man, I am so excited about tonight's guest, EJ Kaga. Welcome, EJ.
Hey, how's it going?
It is going so well. You and I met, we hung out for days, man. We really had a great time. That was such a great trip. Wouldn't you say that?
Yeah, I mean, it was probably one of the better weeks that I've had, work-related.
Well, yeah, especially in your old career, which we'll get to. That's a little clue that, you know, that's a struggle. Have you been to other networking conferences before?
Besides that one, the only other one I went to was FeedAdvisor in Orlando. And that's okay. Like kind of where I met a lot of people.
Okay. Andy went there and he said it was a really good one. A lot of activity, a lot of great people, a lot of good speakers and stuff. This one is different because I don't know how much you bought at ASD, and we bought a bunch of stuff, but it's different now because I don't necessarily go expecting to buy a lot of stuff because, you know, you kind of establish your business, you kind of move on, you'd like to fill it in, but also the time with sellers to me is more valuable than anything I can do. And even it's sitting in the conference, I mean, Prosper Conference was great, it was awesome, met a lot of cool people. But they give you the videos. So quite frankly, the time with other sellers to me was more important. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, once they told me that everything was going to be recorded, I was like, all right, you know, I can always come back and, you know, take a second look at it. But I would agree that networking is probably the biggest takeaway that you can take from any conference.
And I think the networking that we did, especially Monday night at our party, was unbelievable. I mean, you know, where could you get that large of a group of sellers? I mean, you know, I was thinking about how many millions and millions and tens of millions are sold from that group on Amazon. I mean, I wouldn't even gather to guess. 50 million?
Yeah, I mean, I would say something close to that. If that's maybe lowballing, you know?
Well, and so you think about the ability to talk to just about everybody was there. They were all approachable, right, in a nice, safe environment. And let's face it, the food was incredible. Bartenders, I mean, it was so well done. And quite frankly, you're the thank for that because you had it organized because of your background. And I think that's a great segue to get into your background because you were a chef.
Yep.
I guess once you were, or you are? forever?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to a certain degree. I mean, I'm not professionally, you know, cooking anymore, but it's something that, you know, it's like riding a bike. You never like lose it.
Did you want to be a chef and when you were small? I mean, where does cooking come into your life?
Cooking, I always cooked. So like,
as a kid.
Yeah, exactly. I started cooking at home when I was probably less than 10 years old.
Really?
Yeah, my parents, you know, my mother doesn't like to cook too much. My father's kind of like the cooking person in the house. Mm-hmm. So definitely rubbed off. But I started working in restaurants when I was just a little over, so like 14, I started working in restaurants.
And why did you want to work in a restaurant? I mean, was that your choice or is that the way, you know, your parents are like, hey, if you want to buy anything, go to work?
No, it was like the first opportunity. And like, you know, once I got in it, the atmosphere that's in a restaurant, it's kind of a, it's like no other workplace, I would say.
Wait, but so you wanted to get into it. So that urge, that little cooking in the house at 9, 10, whatever, as you continued through this, did you know that was what you were meant to do?
No, for a long time, like until I was maybe 18 or so, there was a person, I was a chef I was working for, and he was like, you know, why don't you go to culinary school and, you know, check it out and see how you like it. And I was like, all right, you know, I didn't really have a certain career that I wanted to follow at that moment. I did always kind of know that I wanted to have something of my own. So that's kind of a, you know, another maybe hint to perhaps why I jumped into Amazon. But for the most part, it was, you know, it was like just a good opportunity. I liked it and I just went for it.
And so you went for it. And so you went to culinary school. I mean, what kind of food, you know, thinking back when you were 14, you know, and I don't know what you started. I mean, I don't know if you start washing dishes and then work your way in. How does that work? I mean, what kind of food did you start to cook and did you lean? I mean, was there a natural thing that you kind of just, it just, you gravitated to because you were good at that?
I think for me, like, you know, everybody asks you like, oh, what's your specialty and stuff like that. But it's, to be honest, I can cook anything. It's, you know, to a certain degree. I kind of like, you know, cooking's, you know, you kind of have to feel it. It's it's a passion industry and it's something you just feel like it. Like, you know, you just know, you know what I mean? Like
it's an art.
There's no certain, yeah, exactly. There's no certain cuisine that I would say like I gravitate to 100% more, but being, you know, half Latin and half Japanese, I did gravitate towards Asian food a lot.
Really? Now, I mean, do you take this approach? I mean, can you just cook two eggs over easy or are you adding all kinds of stuff? I mean, is that the way it is or can you turn it off?
No, I can turn it off. Yeah, you have to understand that, like, you know, people don't always want super high-end food, and even though that's the type of restaurants I was working in.
Yeah, you've had some incredible success, right? I mean, I don't want to downplay it because I actually even knew some of the places. We're sitting there talking about chefs, and you're like, oh, I work for him. Oh, yeah, I work for him. Oh, yeah, he's a great guy, you know? But you also had some time running restaurants and dealing on the business side. And so to me, that's very interesting. And I imagine that plays well into your Amazon business as well.
I would agree. Because, you know, it's something I didn't like to do as far as doing it in a restaurant.
Why?
Because, you know, as a chef, you like to cook.
Okay. So it's like a basketball player who maybe tries coaching and it doesn't work out because he's a player. He's just not a coach. That's not his thing.
Exactly. And, you know, unfortunately, when you are the chef of a restaurant, you know, you have to run the business. So it was a good experience because I think, you know, a lot of people don't know how to run a business. And I was running, it was a $12 million restaurant by the end. So it was definitely a good experience.
So you say the chef runs the business. So walk me through that. So how about a small restaurant? Is the chef, even if the chef is not an owner, he could be running the business? Is that correct?
That's correct. I mean, it depends on the way the restaurant is structured. I wasn't running the whole restaurant. I was partnered between myself and the general manager. So I would take care of all the back of the house stuff related business parts, you know, food costs, labor costs, you know, necessities for the restaurant that was related to the back of the house.
And that's where the heaviest cost other than, you know, labor. Food cost is the heaviest cost in a restaurant, right? You walked me through this scenario. So let's talk about that a little bit because I think it's relevant, again, to understanding your Amazon business. The fact that you knew your food costs were 31%, and if you fine-tune things, you could shave a percentage off, 1 point. In $12 million, that's a material amount of money.
Yeah, I mean, every point counts at the end of the line because the margins are pretty slim on a restaurant, at least the high-end restaurants. They're, you know, 5, 8, 10% if you're lucky.
Eight or 10% net profit. So a restaurant doing $1 million is only going to make 8%?
Yeah, I mean, it's especially around the New York area, it's just the way, you know, between rent and cost of employees and everything like that, it's just, it's not, I wouldn't say it's the most profitable business. That's why, you know, most restaurants do fail within, you know, 1 year, 5 years. It's, well, if you're past 5 years, you're pretty lucky.
Really? So when you see one that's been there 20 years, is that, I mean, what makes that happen?
There's a lot of factors. I would say not renting.
Okay. Or they paid off their debt and then they haven't remodeled. I mean, you know, like when I saw Tavern on the Green go out of business and I thought to myself, man, that's such a staple in New York. How could that go out? It's location, 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 right? It was such a great restaurant. What happened to a restaurant like that?
I would just say it's the time, you know, it gets outdated. And then, you know, there's so many new restaurants always coming up. You know, there's a new restaurant in the city popping up every, you know, every month, every week almost. So, you know, the competition's fierce. So unless you're on top of your game, you're just going to get beaten out by your competition.
So you worked for some really great, some of the really known celebrity chefs. How are they able to do it? Some of them have 20, 30 restaurants, right? I mean, how are they able to manage that much, stay open, and continue to evolve?
To be honest, I don't know.
Okay. I mean, did you wonder it too? Because you saw what it was like.
I
mean,
no, I know. I do know what it takes. It's just, it takes a lot of work. It takes a team of people to really execute these kind of large-scale operations. Because you do have restaurants, you know, in all sorts, you know, all parts of the country and outside the country. So just to manage that is a lot of work.
Oh, so like an Emeril or somebody like that who has them in Vegas and has them in New York and has them in maybe in California or whatever, that, I mean, they're not in all those restaurants very much, right? I mean, they're
no, they have a team of people, and it's some of it's like a, you know, somewhat like a hotels. It's like some of them are managing contracts. Some of them are you know, they're using your name. So, you know, it really depends on the structure that you want to set it up with the person that's investing.
When you were, when you think about all the different careers you had in the restaurant industry, was chef your number one? I mean, is that it? Is that the end all? I mean, is that where you found your best passion? Were you the most successful at? Let me say it that way. That's a better way.
I think I've always been successful at, you know, not to be like, I hate to brag or anything like that.
No, but I
like
get it.
I've always been pretty successful at any job I do. And it's just, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's about your hard work and knowing, you know, where your weaknesses are.
And so where are your weaknesses? What would you say that, it, you know, hey, Steve, you know, I'm weak here. This is where I need to hire out.
It's hiring people probably. I like to take on a lot of work. And it's, I think that's a lot of people have a struggle with is, letting go or relinquishing that responsibility to somebody else.
And have you been able to overcome that? I mean, have you given anything to any of the prep centers for example?
Oh yeah. I mean, that's a no brainer. Like okay. I've tried to outsource all the prep, because it's just, you know, you have to, that was probably the biggest takeaway I learned. Or one of the biggest takeaways I learned as a chef.
But how did you learn how to do that? Because that's a weakness for you. How did you, I mean, what triggered in your mind to say, okay, finally I'm going to let it go. I can't, they might not do it as well as I do it, but I'm going to do it. What was it?
I think, you know, being the chef for the restaurant, it's like you can't cook anymore. You can't be there, you know, taking care of everything. And it's because you have to focus on the business. You have to be focused on the bigger picture, not just the day-to-day mundane stuff that somebody else can do. So that's like, I think that's the biggest takeaway I took from that business into my Amazon business is like, you know, as much as we want to be in the nitty gritty and sometimes do the fun stuff, you have to focus on your business and, you know, let other people do the jobs that take time and take away time from you focusing on your business.
You know, I think about the successful people in the restaurant business, like yourself. You didn't own a restaurant, correct?
No.
Okay. Was that ever a desire of yours to own a restaurant? I know you said you wanted to do your own thing, but that doesn't necessarily mean owning a restaurant.
I think I did, and perhaps maybe I still do in some weird fantasy way. But it's for me, like the type of restaurants I would want to be at, I know the sacrifice it takes to be at that level. And you know, personally, like what I want in my life, it doesn't add up. You can't sacrifice. I don't want to sacrifice my family.
And it's nights and weekends, right? I mean, we talked about that, right? It's nights and weekends, yeah. Period. I mean, it is.
Nights, weekends, holidays, everything.
yeah. You're never going to see your family. Let me ask you this, because I think there's a great, I think the running kitchen, running as a chef, it's like an orchestra leader, right? They're handling all these different things, right? There's all these different people that have to come in at the right time. They have to go out at the right time. Everything's got to be orchestrated well, right? My bet is that all chefs, good chefs, probably would be good as an Amazon seller. Is that fair?
I wouldn't say 100%, but it's, you know, it does. There is some parts of the restaurant industry or like that do correlate to, you know, any business.
It's any business. Yeah. No, but here's my point where I was going with it. What happens to the guys because of what percentage of restaurants fail? Almost, was it 80% or some crazy number, right?
It's pretty high, yes. Yeah. I'm not sure the exact percentage.
What happens to those guys? Where do they go? And ladies, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not, what happens to them?
You know, they end up, you know, a lot of times they end up taking jobs in like hotels and stuff like that. So it's a bit of a different, you know, they try to make it on themselves, but a lot of people can cook and a lot of people are great cooks, but not everybody is a good business person. And I think that's the biggest issue that a lot of chefs have. And as much as we hate to do the business side, it is a necessary evil that you need to control.
How much in the cooking school was business oriented? How much time did they spend, you know, 10%, 20%?
5%.
So there's a miss, right? I mean, yeah. Are you saying that?
I would agree, yeah. I mean, it depends what school you go to. Like, there's other schools that you can do further educate yourself, but it's definitely a part that a lot of people miss. They don't understand the business, and they just think if you cook good food, you'll be successful. And unfortunately, that's not the case.
Well, here's where I was. This is Steve's little connection again. So the fact that you went to Feedvisor, now you just went to ASD. You're investing in education. Fair?
Yes, 100%.
So is that because you realize in order to be successful, you have to have it all because it doesn't work in the cooking business? So this business, you're going to make sure that you're successful by investing continuously. And if that's true, what should other sellers do?
Well, I think it's you should always be trying to learn and be on the cutting edge, because if you're not, then somebody else will be. And, you know, it kind of that what separates the big people from the pack. It's the people who, you know, go out and try to learn what's working right now, because what's working right now is what's actually, you know, building your business and what's going to make you be successful.
I love it. I think there's absolutely a correlation there. I think there's a connection there to, you know, a lot of people, I've seen this out there, you know, why would I go to that conference? Why would I pay $799? You know, what's in it for me? I could just watch YouTube and learn how to do all those things. And I think that's true. You can, if you're that type of learner. But there is something about learning it together, because, you know, some of the things that you and I were talking about, you got a different spin than I did. And I never thought about it from your perspective. And I'm like, ooh. I hope it's vice versa, right? I mean, to me.
I would 100% agree. It goes both ways. You know, the networking, like we said before, is probably the best part. And, you know, in this world that you are running your business by yourself, it is lonely sometimes. And sometimes you don't have that person to ask, or you might, but you can get so much more out of asking somebody else at a conference one-on-one. There's people more willing to share their information and kind of help you out on your business.
And there were so many. All right, let's do this. Let's take a break. And we come back, I want to take and get your biggest takeaways from this last two conferences. You went to two different ones. Just a couple points that you learned that you can take, and I want to hear how you're going to apply them in your business. Okay? Be right back.
Okay.
You know, it's so easy when you get a sponsor for the show and you use their services. And I do. It's Karen Locker's Solutions for e-commerce. solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum will get you 10% off right now. I've been using her for, I guess it's been a year and change since I first interviewed her. Hired her pretty much right after the show because I'm like, I need everything you're talking about. I've got problems with stranded inventory. And guess what? I had lots of problems with stranded inventory last year as the restrictions were coming through. Boom, she'd fix it. If there's an issue with the photo, fixed. All that kind of stuff. I get refunds now. They just show up. Hey, you know, we're replying to your cases. Here's your refund. My feedback. I don't have to fix my own feedback anymore. It's automatically done. And I see the notes coming through. I still once in a while get an email from Amazon saying, hey, you have some stranded inventory. I send it to her. And most of the time, it's already been dealt with and fixed. But let me tell you, being a single operator, my wife and I, this just takes so much off our plate. I can't say enough about it. It's solutions for e-commerce, the number four, solutions for e-commerce / momentum to get 10% off her services. Be sure you tell her I sent you. Solutionsforecommerce.com. Told you, smart dude. This segment I'm really liking because the guy's only 30 years old and he's figured this out. And we kind of talked afterwards after the call. And I think some of it's related to growing up in the restaurant business. You grew up very quickly. You see a lot of stuff very young age and you become very mature very quickly. But we talk about foundation. And I think that foundation thing is so strong. The thing I want you to get from this is he talks about going full time. He spent a year planning, or he had a written plan with some expectations and goals and things he was checking off. Not real giant formal, but he had an idea. He knew where he was going. He knew some of the milestones to get him there. And he planned a year in advance. And that now allows him the ability to take some chances, take some risks, be a little more cautious with what he's buying because he had put the money aside. I think that's so powerful. And what I love is a 30-year-old kid figured that out. That's a mature individual. Let's get into the podcast. And we're back and we're talking with EJ Kaga and we're talking about, how you get from a chef to an Amazon business owner. I don't know if I ever asked you that. You know, why turn off the chef? I mean, I assume, and I think every other person is going to be like, duh, Steve, you're so stupid. Of course, it's because it's nights, weekends, and holidays. He dropped that hint. Is that true? Is that the reason that you've walked away from it?
To be honest, it's not the nights, weekends. It's the amount of dedication you need to put into that business. I was working 65, 70 hours a week. And, you know, I do want to have a family. I don't have one yet. But it's something that, you know, I didn't want to sacrifice. And it's kind of like this cynical way of thinking. Most chefs are like, you know, you do have to sacrifice that part of your life. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, my life, I put that first before my career. You know, that's the choice that I made.
You know, it's funny. I see some of those celebrity chefs and they talk about being divorced and divorced and divorced, right? It just, it's common because of that. As you're saying, you're away so much and you lose that connection. So you're not turned off to cooking, right? I mean, I saw you do some cooking. So you were in your element in that. So you still do it, but
yeah, I still like to cook. No. Yeah, of course. I mean, I still cook at home probably every day.
Okay.
But it's just something, you know, I decided that it's in the long run and like you can't be 65 or 60 and still be cooking like, and I don't want to be an old grumpy chef at a, you know, a tired hotel and just collecting a paycheck. That's not the kind of life I want to have.
And I would assume corporate chefs are not the same as small owner chefs, right? I mean, it's a different environment, right? And there's good and bad, right? And I'm sure it is good and bad depending on the day, right?
Of course. Yeah. There are pros and cons, but.
All right. So let's talk Amazon. So you were not full-time until October of last year, and then you started having incredible success. I mean, like knocking it out of the park. What caused that? I mean, when did you make the decision to go full-time? Is that what triggered you having incredible success? Because, hey, I got to go kill it, could drag something home because I'm going to make my numbers. Or was there something that just kind of turned for you?
So, yeah, I mean, I started selling July 2015, and it was kind of like how most people start off selling. You know, you find some books here and there, go to a store, and you start, you know, you send stuff in, and you almost don't believe that it works. So I did that for a while, but because I was working so much, it kind of inhibited my ability to grow. So then I really focused in on that, you know, early October of last year. And it's where, you know, it's like, all right, let's see how far I can take this with the amount of time I have. And I saw like incredible growth and it was like, you know, it's an eye opener and to see, you know, it's kind of like that light bulb goes off and you're like, okay, this can actually work.
Yeah, it connected, right? All of a sudden, hey, this is not as hard as I thought. I mean, all of a sudden, when you used to go in a store and find nothing, all of a sudden you go in the same store and you see nothing but opportunity, right? I mean, I try to describe that to people. When I go to these things, it's like, wow, I could do this and that with this and that. Yeah, it's not profitable by itself, but if you put it with this and you add this to it, all of a sudden, wow, you know, it's something, right? It's almost like a different color lens. Is that a fair way to describe it?
Yeah, and I think it was good that I took it gradual, because it's you do need that time to educate yourself and learn, because if you just jump in head first, I mean, you could be successful, but at the same time, you could be missing out on some foundational steps that you kind of need to, like the growing pains of most sellers. You know, that's what I think, it's a good progression. You have to take it, you know, step by step.
You have to push past that, right? If you don't push past it, you might as well get out. And there are some people that get out, but if you can push past it, all of a sudden you hit a stride, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, once I left my job, it was scary, because I was, you know, I was making good money for my age, and you know, was stable. I had benefits, so on and so forth. But you know, I wanted something more.
When you left your job and you said, "I've got this big idea. I'm going to sell on Amazon." What did they say, your friends and coworkers?
Yeah, I think some people still don't believe it.
Really?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's such a different industry, and it's, you know, I think most people, like a lot, you know, a lot of other sellers, you say, you know, I started off doing RA and OA like most people, and it's, you know, you tell people you sell stuff online, and it's, you know, even though you explain to them, they just don't get it. You know, they don't connect the dots.
And still you have people like that who you used to work with. Are they still at the restaurant?
Yeah. Most of my colleagues are, you know, most of my friends, at least in this area, are chefs, just because you can't have normal friends. It's just impossible.
Yeah. When you go out, you all go out together because you're the only ones awake, right? Everybody else is already home or fed and home, right?
Exactly. Funny. I mean, we go out at 2 in the morning once we get out of the restaurant, or 1 in the morning. So most people are, you know, then need to wake up at 8 o'clock the next day.
So let's talk about your trips that you were on. So you went to FeedVisor, you just went to this one. Let's talk about what you learned and what you can bring back and apply into your business. So you'd already mentioned one about, you know, outsourcing, right? Against your nature, right? You already said that that's a weakness of yours. You figured that out and did it and got that done. That gave you time, right? You bought yourself time, as Mitchell Lipp always says, right? So talk about some other things that you've learned that you've been able to bring back and put into your business, or you plan on putting into your business, more importantly.
Right now I'm trying to really hire other people. Like, you know, it's outsourcing again. It's you know, if I can automate more of my business, it allows me to focus on what's the biggest picture, which is, you know, growing and optimizing the business and building a good foundation. Because I think, you know, it's not to say that it's easy to just buy stuff and resell them. It does take a certain kind of skill, but it's, you know,
because it's not easy, right?
To a certain degree, I think it's a
scalable. You know, it's not easy. How about that?
Scalable, yes.
Yeah.
But you need a good foundation. I think that's my biggest focus.
And you use that phrase, and I was going to ask you, what would you consider some of the foundational things that people need to be really solid on?
I think it's like their systems. If you have good systems in place, you can scale. And it's because, you know, the problems that I have now, I know they're very minor, but this problems that I know I'm going to have when I'm a bigger seller, that's the problems I'm kind of trying to put the systems in place so it's just easier to grow.
And when you were in the successful restaurants, you described to me processes when we were talking privately. Is that where you're kind of getting that to and putting them back in, saying, okay, what worked is we had processes for this and this and this and this. Is that where you're kind of thinking?
Exactly. I think you need that, like those processes set in place, and because, you know, you don't want to get to the point where you're like, I need to, you know, create all my systems right now. And it's kind of, you want to focus on your business and you can't because the systems aren't in place for you to grow.
I love it. I think that's great advice. Okay. Other foundational items you think?
Other than that, I mean, it's really like, so I'm still kind of holding back on my business.
Okay.
Even though it's doing well, and I'm sitting on still some cash to decide what route I want to invest that money.
That's a good one right there, because there are, you know, I tell people all the time, I have friends that sell millions of dollars RA. I have friends that sell millions of dollars OA, millions of dollars wholesale, millions of dollars private label, millions of now. Well, I don't think they're quite millions yet. They're getting darn close on merch, right? And so, you know, or on eBay. I know somebody sells millions of dollars on eBay. And you sit back and say, what's the right path, right? They're all right for them, but what's right exactly for you?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm trying every possible route at the moment just to see which one I personally like and which one I feel is the most scalable. Because in my sense, that's, you know, if you're building an actual business, these are the things you have to worry about. And as much as people are highly successful doing RA and OA and wholesale and private label and eBay and et cetera, I need to find the one that I find to be the most successful for my business.
And is it just success? I mean, for you, is success just making money, or is there more to it than that?
No, it's the life work balance. That's where that's the real goal. It's if you can balance those two, and I think you've got something.
I'm really hot on this intentional living. I'm really hot on that. And to me, again, if you can figure out what works the best for you for the life you want, then you have it. You have the world by the ears, right? I mean, you've got it. Or the horns, I guess. You've got it, right? Most people are striving for anything even close to that. If you could figure that out intentionally, make your decisions for that, I mean, life is very good, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's why that's the direction I kind of want to take. And, you know, I think being successful is part of that, but not at the sacrifice of my personal life.
Right. You could have stayed in the restaurant business, had incredible success, working 65 hours and never see your kids, right? And exactly. That's not good. That's definitely not good. I love it. Love it. Love it. All right. So foundational stuff, I think that's really strong. What are the things did you learn or have you been thinking about with your business that you think would resonate well with other sellers?
It's, you know, you really have to know what you want to do in this business. I think it's, you know, there's so many, like we said before, there's so many avenues of that you can approach this, you know, but you have to really focus on one and really just go for it and see if this one's working for you. Like for me in my business, I couldn't be selling low margin product. I do have some low margin product in the grocery area, but I know that area is, you know, it's just inherently low margin. But for the most part, I try to go for higher margin items. And it lets me focus on the other parts of the business that I kind of want to pursue at the moment. Because if I, you know, if you're selling something for $100, but you're still, you know, you're making 40% or 50% on something, then for me, I personally don't need to work as hard to make the same amount of money.
Right, because you only have so many hours in the day that you're willing to commit. I like that that focus, follow one course until successful, right? That's kind of cool, is master it and then move on, master it, move on. And in some cases, at least, and it's one of the benefits of the podcast, is I learn what I don't want to do. I talk to so many people and I'm like, ooh, check that off. Oh, I don't want that one. Boom, you know? And so for me, it really helps me get some perspective. Did you meet any sellers and their strategy that you thought, wow, that's something that might work for me that you might attempt now based on the last couple trips you took?
Yeah, I mean, I think the takeaway from the talking to other sellers, I mean, like you said, it's like there's some things that I wouldn't want to do. Like I know we discussed before, like the people who do drop shipping, you know, your margins are tight and it's, you know, your customer service has to be through the roof. For me, that just seems like the biggest headache. But it, you know, if they're happy doing it, that's great for them.
Yeah. There's some people who do it incredibly successfully, but they are the spinning plate guys. I described it, man. They just know how to keep, you know, 50 things going at one time. I couldn't handle it or I would lose interest. My attention span is way too short.
Exactly. I mean, I couldn't do it. So, you know, even like the low margin stuff and especially how Amazon is right now. You know, you don't know if your fees are going to go up. So then obviously then your margin's going to be just that much tighter and then you have to adapt. So for me, it's kind of the direction I want to take is, you know, go for those, slightly higher margins where not you know, I think there's less competition in those markets also.
You had told me something and I still think about, I think I thought about it three or four times since we were together. You had some money put aside that you're kind of using to live on because you were smart and you planned it and you're carefully plodding along. As you said, you still have money put away. So that's a very good power tip. You're probably passing most things, even though they're profitable, to find that your strike price or whatever, your strike margin, you know. To me, that's a very smart move, because if you put in the effort to build that and that only, you're going to have incredible success, right? Because you're not just keeping busy chasing small items, right? To me, I think that's a very, very smart move. And I don't think people get that. There is a thing as cash flow, and I get it. But profitable cash flow at an acceptable profitable level in your mind is better if you can afford to wait it out. Now, not everybody can, but you were intentional about it, right? You were very, I mean, that's probably one of the reasons you were able to jump ship when you did, right? It was a point you had everything kind of aligned.
Exactly. I mean, I wouldn't have left my job just because I just didn't want to do it anymore. It's, you know, it took me, you know, a little over a year to plan this.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah.
And it is. I mean, really, to plan to leave a year in advance is a big deal.
Yeah, it definitely was. And it's, you know, I still had some things to do, or at least things I wanted to achieve on my previous job. So, you know, things kind of aligned as far as money and personal goals. And then, you know, once I left, it was nerve-wracking for a few days. But I knew I still had money saved, and I had, you know, the business was already at a point where if I did want to take out money, I would be able to support myself. If I needed it, correct.
And have you needed it yet?
I've taken some money here and there, and you know, I don't want to take away from the capital that I do have, even though I did save it for this bit, you know, for this time period. Because if I could still take a small cut, and the business will still grow, you know, 8% month over month, it's not too bad, even though I'm still sitting on cash.
Hmm. So are you hitting your goals? I was just thinking, did you plan month to month or whatever? Hey, I want to hit this number. I mean, because you want to grow your business materially next year or this year. I mean, you're planning on it. Are you on path? Do you feel like it?
I would say so.
Oh, that's awesome.
I think I'm going to hit it. As far as like, you know, if I do find that area where I do want to invest the money that I did have saved up, I think it would be fairly easy to get to that point. Because the math makes sense. You know, if you're
not going to make the return anywhere else, right? I mean, that's really the point, right? I mean, you're really not.
No, I mean, you know, and the amount of cash that I have, you know, is enough to, I know how much that will grow my business. It's just where I want to make it grow. You know, I could invest it in RA and that would be great. I know the return I would get on it, but it's personally not where I want to invest my money.
I think about Mike Wolf from American Pickers, and I heard this the other day, and somebody said, well, he might not be the right guy for it. He said that he has no money invested in a 401k. All his money's invested in inventory. Now, let's go a little deeper than that. The guy gets paid to be on a TV show, right? And he probably gets paid handsomely. And he's got several locations, and he sells a lot of merchandise and all the rest of that just gets paid to speak. So I think he's got a little bit deeper than that. But he's figuring that he and his business knowledge is the best investment he can make, and it can outperform the stock market. What's your thoughts on that?
You know, that's hard to say. I mean, the stock market doesn't really make, you know, it does make good money, and it's compounding, and maybe you'll make, if you're lucky, 6 to 8% year over year, unless there's a correction. But, you know, for sure, you can definitely make a bigger return, I think, in this business. And that's one of the allures of most people that get into this business. They see the return that they can get, and the growth is exponential. And it's like most people say, it's just starting.
And we talked about this weekend with some other people was that there are companies starting I'm calling them REITs for lack of a better term, because I think people understand what a REIT is, right? A real estate investment trust where people put together a whole bunch of real estate, they manage it, they make a return, right? It's pretty safe, you know, some are rented, some aren't, and, you know, altogether they make money. They're doing that buying Amazon businesses, and they're putting together kind of a pool, and, you know, they're using investors' monies to buy these business and make a return. I mean, it's kind of a smart business model, right? Because, you know, if you're selling flashlights and this guy's selling tires and this guy's selling clothing and this one's selling shoes and all the rest, a private label, and collectively they're all making a profit, or maybe some aren't, you can get a good return. I think it's pretty smart. We're seeing that in our business right now.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely a smart move, because, you know, the, like we said before, it's just starting out. So even if they could have a, you know, 10% growth every year, but they're generating, you know, 15% profit or 10% profit, I mean, that's a solid investment for most people. I mean, that's,
right. We that's just talked about a restaurant, what, 4 to 8%?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, think about that.
And there's so many possibilities to go wrong, you know?
Right. In a restaurant, right? Because, you know, it's all people, right? Laborers, and somebody could get sick. As you say, somebody next door can open up the next hot restaurant and yours is closes, right? I mean, so there's so many things. Very interesting. So do you plan on investing in more networking/learning opportunities this year?
Yeah, maybe a few more. I'm not exactly sure which ones at the moment, but it's, you know, I wasn't sure about the first one, and I was like, all right, you know, I'll just go. You know what I mean? What's the worst that's going to happen?
I mean, did you know anybody when you went?
No, I didn't know anybody.
Wow, so that's a bold step, dude.
Yeah. You know, I saw other people say that, you know, networking and going to these conferences are probably the best investment. I truly do think it is. It's just, but you have to put yourself out there. If you're the person sitting at the table by yourself the whole day, you know, you're going to be miserable, and maybe you're going to think like, this was the biggest waste of money. But, you know, personally, I don't think I've like gone out of my way, but if you sit down at a table, you meet somebody, you start chatting, and then, you know, one thing leads to another. And, you know, I think the amount of information is crazy. Like, you know, there's some people you speak to and they're selling items that you would have never thought are possible to sell. You know, it opens your eyes to the possibilities.
It really does. You know, I was thinking about, you know, we sat at that one table, and man, the people turned over probably 10 times. You know, I mean, the people, we sat there for hours, it seemed like, and we just, I don't know how many dozens and dozens of people I talked to, and I'm thinking, I haven't really moved. They just keep coming in because we're kind of the only table with a lot of people at it. And yet we got to have so many great conversations. And the good news for us is, like you said, we could go back and watch the videos and watch them at our time and hopefully get something from them. But to be able to do that, to me, is the smartest move you can make. You get more done there. And again, collectively, we met so many great people. Retailers, a wholesale company looking to bypass third-party sellers and wants to sell on Amazon by themselves, and trying to convert that company, she might be listening, I gave her my card, was a really fascinating story, because she's taking this massive, massive company, she's their e-commerce manager, and this is a massive company, has thousands of SKUs. They want to kind of cut out the middleman. They want to sell directly through Amazon, right directly to the public. And I think that's coming faster and faster, right? Don't you think?
I would agree. I think it's a smart move for them, you know, and it's something that's, you know, if they're willing to dedicate a team of people to do that, like, they're going to benefit from that.
But she's saying that the resistance is so strong, you know, because they're so established and the relationships they have are so established. It's like turning an ocean liner, you know, it's just so, so hard today. Now,
yeah, but
2 years from now. Well, yeah, I agree.
That would give some Amazon sellers the edge. You know, some companies aren't willing to do this, and maybe they've had a sour taste in their mouth selling directly to Amazon. And, you know, there's maybe a semi-big seller or a seller that is, you know, willing to help them with this part of their business. And, you know, if they get that deal, you know, you only need one deal to make it on Amazon sometimes.
Oh yeah, I agree with you. And in their case, they're paring down to maybe 50 sellers. Now think about that. They're paring down to 50, and then they're going to go from there. So I think it's not an all or nothing. But my point is that is occurring. It's hard today, but 2 years from now, my bet is it's not going to be as difficult as, you know, I think that that will be like, oh yeah, geez, that, you know, because those guys talk and they're going to be like, oh yeah, once you do this, you're going to have the best sales in the world, right? And you take all that cost out because they're under pressure. You know, I thought about this too. Kmart announced, and Sears, you know, they're closing a million stores more, right? Everybody's closing, right? Yeah. All those stores bought crap. You know, Kmart has stores full of junk. And I don't mean it in a derogatory way. I'm just saying they have tons of stuff sitting in those stores. They bought it from somewhere. If they don't sell it, and they're not selling it, hence the reason they're going out of business, that's going to affect those factories, right? And those manufacturers and those distributors. Where are they going to sell stuff? Oh, just sell it online. Well, they're already selling it online most of the times. Yeah. So it's not like there's going to be that much more, more buyers out there. So they're going to have to figure something out. And so my bet is they're going to cut back manufacturing and production. And that comes at, they're going to save money, but that's not going to help their bottom line necessarily because they're not selling, right? So there's no profits. So if they can squeeze out more profits by selling it directly themselves, that's the natural course. I mean, I see nothing but that.
Yeah, I think the writing's on the wall, like they say. You know, it's the sooner you let go of your preconceived notions and kind of follow the trend, those are the people that are going to stay in business.
You know, I heard, and I don't know this to be true, so I'm using secondhand information, but I saw him say it. Gary Vee said something to the effect that the Macy's is closing their stores and they're using that money to invest in Facebook ads to sell directly, you know, to get more, you know, more buyers into their stores directly, you know, that kind of thing. And so I think there's going to be more competition in that way, right? And it's going to be more challenging. What do you advise people who are starting to realize that, you know, where they used to be able to go into Target, I always use the end caps, you know, they go in and scan some stuff and sell it like no big deal. And it's getting harder, right? They're not finding as much because guess what? Target's getting smarter with their inventory management system. They're not going to get dumber. They're going to get smarter. There are other sellers. There's other competition. What do you advise people who are starting to see that and say, hey, now is the time to do what?
Yeah, I mean, it's like there was the keynote speaker, I think, at this conference right now. There's a saying about the blue ocean and the red ocean kind of thing. And it's where, you know, you kind of have to go away from where everybody is and kind of see where that new trend is going or see where the opportunity is. And I think, as much as people do RA, it's, for me personally, and obviously some people might have different opinions on it, I don't see that it's going to be, maybe here for the next 10 years or something like that, or 8 years, you know what I mean? It's still going to be here, and I think still people will be successful at it, but it's you should pursue the things that are a real business. And not saying that RA and OA is not a real business, but it's not the same. It's not what I would consider a sellable business.
Yeah, you're not going to sell it. There's nobody going to buy it, right? Unless you have daily payouts, unless you have some great terms or something like that. There's no secret sauce, right?
Exactly. It's just hard work.
Right. And the successful sellers, and I don't want to downplay this, they outsource a lot of that RA to others. And there is a skill there. Don't get me wrong. But you're a manager. You're a manager that comes with the business. Then that's what they're going to sell. That's a tough thing to sell. The ones that I like, my opinion on that is the people that take that money and invest it in another type of business, be it a wholesale business, be it a private label business on Amazon, or be it real estate or their own restaurant, for example, right? The ones who that. Yeah. I think that's a smart move. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree. So, and I think that's my long-term goal. It's, as much as I believe in Amazon right now, businesses don't last forever, just see like Macy's and them, they've been around for however many years. And then some of them are closing and, you can't be naive to the sense that this one business is going to take you to the rest of your life. I mean, for me, I still have, 30 plus years of life, I hope, or more.
I hope so, because I'm approaching your 30 plus years over your age. I hope you got a lot more than that, dude, because don't get me down. Jeez, you mean working career. Please say it that way.
Correct.
Thank goodness. You had me worried there for a second. You think I'm one foot in the grave, man.
So for me, like, my long-term plan is, use Amazon to catapult other businesses between real estate or, I have a lot of family that's not in the United States. And I think there's so much opportunity also, you know, outside of the United States, offshore. Just it's, you know, between real estate and stuff like that, it's just going to be, it's easier to invest in some of those markets than it is in the U.S.
Well, it's a lot less expensive right now, right? Let's face it, right? Some of those countries are not developed enough yet. So land is dirt cheap, right? I mean, literally dirt cheap, right? And so that's a very smart move if you can do it and, you know, successfully look at the long play and say, hey, 20 years from now, this land is going to be worth $1 bazillion and I'm already reinvesting enough to get what I want. And if I can take and build an empire, right, and eventually take advantage of it, I think it's a smart move, especially in a country you know is going to come. There are many countries that you can pick that are up and coming. You know it. You just know they're going to be hot.
And it's like, you know, that's why Amazon's such a good opportunity right now because, you know, it is booming right now. You know, how long is it going to boom for is hard to say, but might as well take the opportunity while it's there.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything in our lifetime so far that has been, you know, we're way past the gold rush, right? We were never going to be the big oil people, right? This is something that I don't think we've seen in our lifetime. And I don't know others are going to see it. I mean, I guess it's hard to predict the future, right? But for the foreseeable future, Amazon, e-commerce, and, you know, who knows if it's going to be Walmart next, right? That's going to be the big success. Something else is going to be successful, right? I don't think there's anything else right now on the horizon that can give you the opportunity that Amazon right now and eBay and Etsy and blah, 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 blah are giving us. Agree?
No, I agree. I would 100%. It's, you know, and the thing is you have seen people be successful at it. You know, and I've always been interested in businesses or like side businesses. And, you know, before this, you know, a lot of times a lot of them seemed like scams or it just didn't make sense. But this one.
Yeah, tricking Google to get them to pay you. That was the way to make, right? I mean, think about it. That's what they used to be. Oh, man, we got the system. Basically, we're going to convince their algorithm that we're giving them a bunch of traffic and you're going to get paid a whole bunch of money. Man, I know you made money, but man, that's not good for your soul, that stuff. That's not soul cleansing.
Yeah, you know, people make their own choices, but it's like, you know, how long did that last? You know,
right.
So, you know, as much as, you know, maybe you made money for the short term, but if you didn't have that long-term plan, then you're going to be left out, you know. But I think Amazon and stuff, you know, I think there is a longer term plan. You know, some people are building a real business or, you know, brands and, you know, the barrier of entry is so low compared to what it was or what it used to be.
Right. No, I agree. Anybody could get into this business. It's the sustaining it, building, as you said, that foundations. I love your foundations. Putting the systems in place, the processes in place. If you don't pay attention to this, because it will get old. Has this become a job for you yet?
No.
Oh, I mean, it's awesome. That's what I was hoping you'd say. I've had a few people that said it has. This is a job, Steve. Don't downplay it.
Like, I still work, I would say, over 40 hours a week, but it's on my terms, you know? Nobody else is kind of telling me, you know, you can't do this, or I need to send out a report to describe everything I did, you know?
Right.
It's, and, you know, I think you do have to take the step back sometimes and take a look at your business and see the direction it's going and see that it's actually being profitable, because that's the biggest thing. A lot of times you just see sales. But at the end of the day, are you actually profitable? That's the biggest.
Yeah. I see that more and more, you know, oh, I sold $5 million. Okay. Well, if you're, you know, and I'm not putting them down, if you're a drop shipper and you're operating at 3-4% optimally, you know, I mean, if that's one person who's earning that, that's a lot of money. But if you got a whole bunch of people and you're splitting it, it's not quite so much money, you know. And so you've really got to know a little bit more about the business model to understand it. And then you got to know whether they're efficient. If they have no clue, then they're leaving a lot of money on the table. You're back to your, you know, it's back to the beginning conversation in food cost, right? Number one cost in a restaurant, food cost, 1% makes a huge difference. Well, in our case, cost of goods, number one cost, right? Outside of Amazon fees, both of those two are probably up there, probably pretty close in fees. 1% makes a huge difference in that business, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of the reasons why I'm kind of like, I don't really like the smaller margin products, because you don't know when the fees went up. I mean, we all noticed that the fees went up, you know, for Q4 and stuff like this. So, you know, if you're running on a small margin business, you know, that little percentage that goes up is going to eat away a lot of your your profits.
Right. And you felt it in a couple places, right? You felt it in the fees, you felt it in the storage fees, and then you felt it again in the storage fees. So all those things combined, you could take a profitable product and make it unprofitable very, very quickly. And velocity will hurt you the more unprofitable stuff you sell.
Yeah, that's the killer, you know. And it's, you know, luckily I've been fortunate enough to really focus on, you know, what will make my business grow. And you know, I think that's, you, fortunately, like, I don't need to take away money from the business. And I think a lot of times when you do need to take away money from your business and your business is struggling, sometimes you make the wrong choices.
Well, you're like, forced into making the wrong choices, right? You see no other way. And that's dangerous. I love 1 year of planning. I mean, the things I'm taking away from this conversation about those foundations and the 1 year of planning. I think that if people can get that, where it allows you to keep your standards so high, you don't have to sacrifice them and make those uncomfortable choices. You're walking past a lot of stuff. You're leaving a lot of stuff on there. And I know people say, well, I'm just going to put it in a box. I'm sending a box in anyway. Those fees that you were sending a box for can start to affect you because shipping rates have gone up even, right? I mean, all those things. And you start feeling those things. Those little things over time start to add up. And again, look back to EJ's example, 1% in the kitchen makes a huge difference.
Yep. I mean, it's definitely, you have to know what's going on in your business. Because, you know, people tell you just, you know, you buy stuff, you sell stuff, or even like, you know, the wholesale accounts I have, you know, as much as, you know, you can contact wholesalers and get those, or distributors and get those accounts, but it's, you have to get the product that actually will make you money.
Mm. And sometimes you do have to take some okay products to get the relationship to develop it to the next level. I get that.
I would agree, but you know, it's your part of the business where you have to take care of building that relationship and then, you know, kind of pushing the envelope a little bit as far as, you know, prices and stuff like that. Hmm.
So your hard work is probably your biggest strength. I mean, is that one of the things that pushes you through no matter what?
I would say so. And plus not being naive about, you know, what I, you know, expect and what actually has happened. You know, you kind of have to be.
Well, where do you get that from? Hold on a second, because that's odd. You're not naive. You're only 30. So tell me where is it, because you worked in the restaurant business and seen it all?
It might be. I mean, like, you know, it's in the restaurant industry. It's very black and white to the sense that, like, if you mess up, it's on you. You know what I mean? A lot of people kind of say like, oh, it's somebody else's fault or something like that. But I've always had the, maybe it's just my person. I've always been my worst or my best judge of, you know, my work. And I know if I did something wrong and, you know, if I did something wrong in my business, you know, I don't need somebody else to tell me. And I think that's one of the traits that a lot of entrepreneurs need to have.
Ooh, you just went deep. Finish it up because I think you're onto something. Go for it.
So you need to be your, like I said, you need to be your devil's advocate and really, you know, take a step back and see, you know, are you doing a good job? Are you actually working on your business? And are you really improving on your business?
So when Amazon raises their fees, whose fault is it that you're making less money?
I guess it's your own, you know what
I
mean?
Right, because you didn't, I mean, and this hurts because guess what? I'm not excusing it because it hurts. It hurts me too. So don't think this is Steve holier than now, but it's the truth. You didn't plan for them changing their fees. Fair?
That's correct, yeah.
I mean, when you have a big business and you have employees and their union, they can go on strike, right? Or if they could threaten to unionize. You got to plan for that stuff. There's contingencies. You got to have focus on that. The fact that these outside external forces changed and you didn't plan for it, quite frankly, it is your fault. It's my fault. Yeah. It's Steve's fault.
Exactly. I mean, and it's hard for a lot, you know, it's hard for people to kind of.
It hurts,
accept.
Man.
Yeah.
It does hurt.
And, you know, that's, you know, I think that's, you know, one reason also that a lot of people are moving, let's say, off Amazon because, like, you know, they don't have complete control. And they want sometimes have slight more control to in their business because, you know, we are all kind of at the mercy of Amazon. And, you know, there's some people who will completely stay on Amazon, but I think it's a smart move to kind of go off Amazon also.
Yeah, no, I agree because they're making choices that's best for their business, to be fair, right? I mean, that's not unreasonable, and they don't quite frankly care about Steve or EJ, not in a bad way. They're not making decisions with us in mind. They're making decisions for them and their survivor because Macy's going out of business affects them, not necessarily always a good thing too. I mean, there are other, this allows other people to come into the market, right? This, I mean, there are other things that can happen that can affect their business. And so they have to stay on top of it. And so they're going to continue to tweak their business, and there are ripple effects, and we feel those effects, and we have felt them in the last year, a few different times, painfully in my case. How about yours?
I think so. I mean, it's definitely, you have to, but you have to adapt. I mean, I've talked to some sellers that have been selling for, you know, 15, 20 years, and it's, you know, there's always something that's going to change. But you have to adapt. That's the, you know, that's the biggest takeaway. And that's one of the takeaways I took from, you know, going to a conference and speaking to a seller that's, you know, 15 years in this business or 20 years in this business. And, you know, they've seen it all. And as much as, like, you know, some of our us smaller sellers or newer sellers that we've just started, you kind of, you can't be naive to that notion.
That's deep stuff right there, because I agree with you. The fact that that guy could survive in this business 15, 20 years should give us all hope. I mean, here's the way I look at it. If he could do it, you could do it, right? You just have to, you know, maybe there's some luck involved or whatever, but you just have to be thoughtful and as you say, adapt, right? And so that's what it takes. You can't go down one path and just expect it to stay straight. It is going to veer off, right? It is going to switch. It's going to come back and forth. And sometimes you have to take a step back. I don't know who it was I was talking to this weekend. They were talking about that they had to take a few steps backwards to get control of what they had. That hurts a little bit, you know, because that kind of says, you know what, I didn't do it right. You know, I didn't do it right. And that's okay.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm taking my time, because it's, you know, growth is, I don't want to say it's easy. But if you have capital, it's kind of easy to grow. But if, you know, you can grow, but then if you have to backtrack, you know, 10 steps just to kind of reorganize and re-systemize and put these new processes in, then it's why, you know, why did you do all this growth just to take another step back?
Unprofitable growth is not good. Profitable growth is good, but unprofitable growth, and it might have been profitable at the time, as you pointed, though, when you have to rescind and take back and all that kind of stuff, your profits are long gone. And then you're sitting back there after all that work, you're no further ahead. That hurts. And I've seen that happen. And I was talking to somebody about it, and that's what they did. And I'm like, wow, you know, that hurts, man. I get it. Okay. So the goal of this podcast is to help people move forward. And I love the foundational stuff. And I'll actually pop in a couple little comments about it, because I just think it's so powerful, so strong. Give us a tip or trick that you think somebody can put into their business to help them move forward and get unstuck.
You know, I think it's knowing, really understanding your business, you know how much, you know, what your bottom line is and what your actually your margins are and how much money you're actually making, and, you know, even your sell through rate. 'Cause, you know, you can buy a lot of inventory and you can put up a lot of big numbers, but if you're stuck with that inventory, it doesn't make any sense.
That eats cash flow very, very quickly, man. That is solid advice, dude. I was so fortunate to be able to spend that much time with you. I hope my listeners realize, what a great guy you are. And, somebody wants to get in touch with you, can I pop your Facebook contact out there? They want to follow up on
something? Yeah, no problem at all.
Okay. Man, I appreciate it so much. Can't wait to see you again. Thank you so much. I wish you nothing but success. Take care.
Thank you.
So I told you that'd be a little different, but I think it was a great story, and I'm excited for him and his family, and I can't wait to have him back when he finishes his next book. ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Take care. Are you looking for inventory this time of year? I have just the answer. It's called The List. Yep, that's it. The List. It's a premium sourcing service brought to you by Andy Slammons, where you get quality, actionable inventory from real sellers. These are million-dollar-plus sellers who bring you the finds in real time. Oh, and by the way, they're buying them themselves. Bring your business to the next level with The List. There are a few openings, but it's capped at 100, and they're so close, but you still can get in if you sign up now at thelistishere.com, thelistishere.com. Oh, and make sure you tell Andy I sent you.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.